Hello, friends. Jeff Stuckey here. It's time to go find our balls. Let's go together, shall we? Shotgun position. Greg Allen behind the driver's wheel. Greg, how are you?
Well, I'm doing good today, Jeff. Kind of excited about things we're going to talk about. And
Again, how do we know when you're excited? We just have to take your word for it?
Yeah, I'll tell you. And I won't lie.
That's true. Yeah. You totally, completely do not have the capacity to lie. Whereas I like to enjoy it, unfortunately. So we have tried to kill small talk with Greg, but the damn thing just keeps coming back to life. So we're going to listen to the universe, and we're going to continue the segment, Small Talk with Greg. Now, if we're going to keep doing this, we got to get some kind of musical introduction
absolutely.
Or something.
Yeah.
So we're going to have to marry this thing or kill it today. And I guess we'll decide after today's edition of Small Talk with Greg.
Okay. And I'll try to lead in as though I just going to do a small talk thing.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So
that's good. Almost like a role play.
Yeah.
Cool.
So yeah, Jeff, man, weird thing happened to me a couple of days ago.
And Greg, when you say a weird thing happens to you, that fucking thrills me because I can't even come up. Yeah. Like, I can't even fantasize the shit that actually happens to you.
I
speak for all of our listeners when I say we are now all ears.
Okay, well, now that's too much weight. I mean, this was just a random thing.
Oh, apologies. Okay.
Okay. So I'm sitting on a Main Street, a little park bench with a friend of mine. He looks like he's homeless. He's not homeless. He's aimless and he's crazy, but he's not homeless.
Aimless, crazy, but not homeless.
He could pass for homeless guy very easy.
Okay.
And then I'm sitting there, I got my little dog, I'm taking him out. You know, he's a little, high-end dog, whatever, you know, you pay a lot for. My wife.
Snobby dog, is
yeah,
that?
Yeah, so it's my wife's dog.
Bougie, I think is
bougie,
perhaps
okay.
what they call it.
We'll go with that.
All right.
But I look worse than a homeless guy because I just been on my three-day plumbing experiment trying to fix something. So, you know, I'm like got on the worst clothes. I'm probably smell, you know, and a sock hat and stuff. And I look pretty bad, unshaven and no haircut. that's just part of it, but just painting a picture. And we talk for a while, you know, and then we get up and just go separate ways. And I'm walking back to the condo. And these two guys pass me, younger guys.
Can I just interject quickly?
Yes.
Is the crazy, aimless, not a homeless guy an acquaintance, or is this a first-time interaction?
No, I've talked to him
You
before.
Guys talk. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay, just,
yeah.
All right.
And so I pass these two guys, and well-dressed, good-looking, young, professional guys, you know, I guess at the end of their workday. And they're talking, and about the time I get past them, just a step or two, one of them says to the other, I don't see how homeless people have dogs, you know. And it took me a few more steps because I'm thinking, that would be weird. And I'm looking at
her like, why the fuck? Yeah, how can they take care of a dog and not take care of themselves?
Yeah,
and then it occurs to you.
Yeah. So that was good.
So did you engage our young, snobby professionals?
Had I caught him? So by this point, you know, we're
so you had little
12,
distance.
15 feet away. So I'd go, hey, buddy, come back here. That wouldn't have worked. But if I could have said, I'm thinking the same thing, you know, but it just didn't happen.
That's, that is something that's in the lane of only happens to Greg Allen.
Yeah, I see that now.
I mean,
so you haven't been sitting on a park bench with the homeless guy or homeless-esque? No.
With a bougie dog and then mistaken as a homeless person?
No.
I don't have an experience that even is like, well, this is kind of like, no, I can pitch you nothing.
Okay.
And I'm trying, man. I'm digging deep into the recesses and I got nothing.
Well,
that's fantastic.
Yeah. Well, can I say this part? And I hate to ruin the small talk with some depth, you know.
Well, I think we can. Well, let's conclude small talk with Greg.
Okay.
And then we'll just kind of use this as transition into whatever the fuck's going to happen next.
Well, the depth of this, I've hung out with several groups of people that are not in the mainstream culture, and then been mistaken for one of them just because of association. And then you hear comments that people make, or they treat you a certain way, and it can be hurtful. You know, it doesn't bother me necessarily. I could think it's funny, but it just makes
me... But you're not true to the tribe.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. They let me in, but they know I'm, you know, provisional. but anyway, it makes me think, you know, we need to be conscious of just stray comments that we make, even just glances, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, we just should be aware of how that could affect someone.
Yeah.
Oh,
people are fucking mean.
They can be.
And it's hard to know, you know, even in the polarity of the political culture that we're in right now and all of those things, it's like, it seems like fucking mean is the norm. And it's, but both, whoever is at odds, both feel equally justified in just the absolute egregious things that they say to each other. And it's like, I'm going to botch this, which is unfortunate, but it's, but I do try to use that mantra, you know, before you open your mouth, it's, you know, is it true? Mm-hmm. Is it useful? Is it kind?
Right.
And it's like, we'll fuck all that.
Oh, yeah,
like,
yeah.
It's like, yeah. Who gives a fuck if it's true?
Yeah, right.
How deep is this going to cut them?
Mm-hmm.
Now I'm totally going to say it.
Yeah.
And I don't know how you recover from that, but yeah. It would be nice if we, I mean, didn't kindness and humility and modesty, that was a thing at some point, wasn't it?
I feel like it was, you know.
And not all that long ago. I mean, fuck.
Yeah.
Just, yeah, anyway, that's probably a different podcast. But
And I see that in some places, small little communities. I've seen it down south. And then even in Nashville. I mean, that's not a small city.
Right,
but,
right.
So this was just a little suburb and stuff. But people just seemed kind, you know. It seemed out of place in some sense.
Yeah, it's fascinating. There was some research done in the 50s. And there was this community in Pennsylvania. The area escapes me. It'll come to me. But the reason that it got on anybody's radar screen was in the 50s in men, heart attack, heart disease, cholesterol, those kinds of things were just epidemic. And so this one general practitioner happened to notice that Rosetta, that's the suburb, and they were referred to as the Rosettans. And there was a GP in that area that noticed that these people were not being affected by this epidemic. And so they did all of this medical research and, you know, they thought, you know, perhaps it's like some kind of genetic anomaly or it's diet or it's lifestyle. So as they started to kind of assess that, they found out that these were incredibly sedentary people. They smoked a lot. Their diet consisted of very high saturated fat. And so they're like, well, holy fuck, what is going on? And so then they had some sociologists come in. And what they found was it was normative for this society to have multiple generations living under the same roof.
Mm-hmm.
That there was no noticeable differentiation between the haves and have-nots. There was no ostentatious displays of wealth. The civic activity, they had an inordinate number of just active civic groups that made this just, and that was the only association that they could make, that the connection that they shared, the rapport, all of these kinds of things were the difference makers in what was something that really threatened their mortality.
Yeah, yeah.
And they went back recently and they studied it again and they found that future generations moved out away from and engaged in the similar lifestyles of that opposite of what it was before.
Yeah.
And now their occurrence of heart attack and heart disease and all of those kinds of things was on par with the rest of the country. And it's so we treat this thing like the community kindness all of, like so flippantly. Mm-hmm. I mean, like it's like, and it's like you look at the world today and you wonder what's wrong with it. It's like, well, fucking mean. Like it ain't a goddamn mystery.
Yeah,
we say horrible, awful things to each other. When people fail, like we celebrate, like, I knew that was fucker. I mean, it's like, it's kindness matters.
Yeah.
Anyway, enough of that rant. So you and I serendipitously had a simultaneous experience that we were not aware of.
That's right.
And so this past weekend, we both found ourselves at the Eric Church concert, which I'm still like, had I not been fairly deep in the bourbon at that point. And then I do get a point on the weekends where I just don't check my phone. I'm just like, fucking, I mean, I may check it just to make sure one of my kids isn't dying or something like that. But I just don't check my phone. And I'm not one of those people that goes to a concert and watches it through my phone.
Right.
Like that's not a good time for me.
Yeah.
But anyway, so.
Yeah, so I get
you and Eric Church.
I know. I got a call at 5 o'clock from somebody that said, "Hey, you want some tickets to the concert?"
Oh, on the night of.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, well, it's about 5:30.
The doors open at 6 or something, didn't they?
I know. So we only lived a block and a half away. So I go, I think I can make that. And my son-in-law is an avid country fan.
Now, did you have any back knowledge of Eric Church or any?
No, okay. No. I'd seen the name, you know, but I couldn't have told you one of his songs.
Oh, okay. All right.
So yeah, it's like, well, I'm about trying new things. Not that a concert's new.
Well, it ain't fucking Pink Floyd, that's for sure.
I know. But were you there at the beginning or right before you came out? That intro song was all Pink Floyd all over it.
Oh, I don't know. I think I was still.
Yeah.
Standing in the drink line, so sorry, man. Priorities, dude.
Okay. Well, when the lights went off
and concert.
Stage turns red, they were playing something that was Pink Floyd-esque.
Oh, cool. All right.
So, yeah, it was great.
Is that true? It was great. Like,
well, here's the thing. Two things. I was amazed at how it moved me, like musically.
Okay.
Like, wow. I have no idea what he's saying. I've never heard this song, but like, I'm kind of moving to it. You know. And not quite as much as the drunks around me.
Sure.
But, you know, they were constantly being pushed back in the seats by the guy in the center whose job was to keep the aisle clean. But anyway, yeah, it was moving me physically. And then after a while, when it started affecting me emotionally, it was like, wow, how is this doing this? When I don't even know what he's saying.
Right.
You know?
I can relate to that because I'm not a huge... What I like about Eric Church is that he wears his Ray-Bans all the fucking time.
Okay.
And as you know, I aspire to have the status where I can just wear my Ray-Bans all the time. And I just need to commit to it. It's like, fuck, I can just do that. But I just don't think I have the social credibility for it.
And then you can't stop when you start.
Right.
You have to do it forever.
And then when my clients, I don't know, that's like Jeff, are you going to take your Ray-Bans off? No, I'm not. Okay. So anyway, so that just creates a lot of complexities that I'm not at the point that I can solve.
Mm-hmm.
But I get what you're saying about there's something about his music that just really does, if it's one of the more aggressive songs, like it just kind of gets you going. But if it's one of those more melodic, just kind of, I don't know, he's got some song called Springsteen, and I don't know any of the words, but it's just kind of, na, 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 na. You know, and you're just kind of swaying along. Yeah, so there is a power to his music, I agree.
Yeah.
But this concert affected you on a more, I would say, philosophical level, you would say spiritual level, like enlighten us.
Okay. Well, you know, I posted about it, but I can go ahead and explain that now, because not everybody reads my post.
Greg, I don't want to crush you right now.
Well, 18 people read it, so listen.
Oh, 18, okay.
No, I'm teasing, yeah. I don't know. Anyway.
Yeah, I was going to say, yeah. I'm going to validate that number while you're sharing.
Okay. So, yeah, one of his songs, him and his co-singer, Joanna Cotton, were going.
That woman can sing.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Yeah,
I mean, when she unleashes, God damn, man.
I'm not sure how he refers to her, but it's not backup singer. She started that way, and it's like, okay, this ain't that anymore.
Oh, no, man. She, yeah, anyway. Yeah.
So, yeah, so they're singing about a relationship, and I think he's saying, she loves me like, and I had no idea what she loved him like. I just knew.
What's so beautiful about that is that's one of his most popular songs.
Okay.
And you are the only person in the audience that is like, what's he saying?
I don't know.
Which is fascinating. I mean, but this also just completes the whole story.
Yeah,
so anyway.
Yeah. So, I mean, I was wanting that little piece of information, you know. but you're right. Everybody else knew it. Anyway. So, you know, they say that several times and he finishes the line. I just never knew what the last part was until they stopped right at, she loves me like, and then it just went silent. So they waited quite a while and then he brings it back in with Jesus Does. And I had chills for that moment, you know, to where it's like, wow, I wasn't expecting that. I mean, there's a lot of ways she could have loved me that I would have said, well, yeah, that's what country songs are like, you know? But I didn't see that one coming. And it was like, okay. And it wasn't.
So that just kind of next levels it for you?
Oh, yeah. And I thought that was the extent of it, you know, where like, oh, wow, that was neat. That's very good songwriting kind of thing. And that touched me, that kind of that level. Until the next day where I wake up in the morning earlier than normal and I'm like freaking out. Like it's just going through my mind what that meant. I mean, I don't know if I was dreaming it or just woke up and I start thinking it. I can't know, but I do know that I was trying to put that into words. Like, what did that mean? What does that mean in my life? What would that look like if people did that? You know, what if it was just you doing it with one person? I mean, that could change things, you know? And so this is like 4 o'clock in the morning. Well, it was actually 3:30 because I got up and I just started typing, trying to get the words out. You know, I mean, because the words were there. I just needed to get them out. I find that a lot when I write fiction. It's like, I'm just typing what's already out
right.
there.
Yeah.
But this wasn't fictional, though. Just putting that together, like, man, would that be amazing if I knew that when I woke up, my spouse, my friends, my family, and I'm not saying they don't at some level, but what if I knew that they accepted and loved me completely, not dependent on my worthiness, you know, and no connection to my past wrongs or any kind of grudge or resentment, which is one of my major sins is resentment, you know. It doesn't come out, but somewhere in there is buried this seed of like, gosh, I was wronged there, you know, and that's got to go. I know that. But what if that just wasn't a part of our relationships? I mean, that just seemed phenomenal, just too hard for me to get my head around.
I can't have had an epiphany, I guess, to that degree. I didn't know. My thinking wasn't any more sophisticated than I liked somebody or I didn't like them.
Yeah.
And not really even having a consciousness of what my categories were. Mm-hmm. Probably did they think I was, if they thought I was cool, I liked them.
Yeah.
And if they didn't think I was cool, they were a stupid son of a bitch.
Yeah,
right.
Right.
And I remember early on in my professional development, a client disagreeing with me. And I remember that just spiraling me, like, and not really even knowing what other than I'm going to go on the attack.
Yeah.
And I was so preoccupied with the experience that I don't even really know what I said, but believe it or not, they did not reschedule.
Okay, best like, for both of you.
That dude's got some fucking issues. Like, he needs to find his own therapist. Yeah. And I had been exposed to Carl Rogers' work which he refers to as person-centered therapy. And in his discussion of person-centered therapy, he labeled this notion unconditional positive regard.
Yeah.
And it, you know, that term, that phrase, unconditional positive regard, it stuck in my mind like a splinter a long time before I really understood it. But eventually it evolved to this understanding of, and this is what he meant, right? This isn't anything that it was just my futile, infantile little mind. Always be for your client. You're always for them. No matter what they bring into your office, no matter what issues are going on, it's, I am for you. I want the best for you. I want to join in with you in whatever place you're at. Mm-hmm. And I'm not going to presume that I know exactly how to help you or that I fully understand how you got to where you are. Mm-hmm. And that's, you know, that's the kind of thinking that I would do, like, you dumb fuck. I'd never do that to my own life.
Right.
But then when you back up and you hear their story, you know, it's the mm-hmm. cliche, walk a mile in their shoes mm-hmm. without judgment.
Mm-hmm.
100% of the time, I'm like, I could totally fuck my life up that way. I could so easily have already done that or do that tomorrow.
Yeah.
And then pulling back and not assuming that I know exactly what you need from me.
Mm-hmm.
And that, for me, was such a fucking freedom.
Mm-hmm.
The pressure of, one, just the angst of judging everyone.
Yeah.
Fuck.
Because you know it's wrong, but you're still doing it.
And not knowing how to stop it. Yeah. And just the like, And for me, this is why stepping away from religion was good for me, because the whatever, I don't know what I formed on my own and how much is inherent in a religious orientation, but there's a presumption of I have some level of enlightenment, right? I have, now for me it was I'm saved, right? And you're not saved, and I need to save you.
Mm-hmm.
Fuck, that's too much pressure for a moron like me.
Yeah, yeah.
It's just anybody. Like, and well, I could ramble about that. So stepping outside of that orientation, and adopting this unconditional positive regard, I have no fucking clue how you got to the point that you got. And part of therapy, right, is filling that narrative in, even for the client, because they don't even know, right? They've just been reacting to these circumstances, just boom, 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 boom. And it's like, they don't even know. Oftentimes they're sitting in that position thinking, I'm just a maladaptive, defective, pathological human being, mm-hmm, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so then when you're curious about their story, not mm-hmm. presumptuous, like, God, you are a fucked up individual, but, well, let's talk about how you got to this place.
Mm-hmm.
And not that you ask that question, you ask other questions, but when you just approach it with a curiosity,
mm-hmm.
not judgment, why the fuck did you do that? Well, how the fuck did that happen?
Yeah, what? Not looking but it's for
just
blame. Like,
right. Yeah. It just, the rapport, that is a sacred space
mm-hmm.
to where you just are connected in a way where there isn't any of that emotional angst, you know, where I'm like, I'm so superior to mm-hmm. you, and we're fucking in this together, and together meaning understanding it and determining where we go from here, that just became unconditional positive regard, just became my conscious mantra for a very long time. And the two things that I would usually say, because I'm a fucking weirdo, I have this little checklist that I go through every morning. One is the Hippocratic Oath, above all, do no harm. Just being very conscious of that. Above all, do no harm. Above all, do no harm. The second thing is new beginning. I don't fucking know anything. Whatever I think I understand, I probably don't understand. And new beginning comes out of the Buddhist orientation that today's a new day. I don't want it to be limited by my experiences from yesterday. And then the third thing is unconditional positive regard. Unconditional positive regard. The second that I interact with my client, I want them to feel that unconditional positive regard.
Wow, that's great. And you know, you taught me that. Oh, probably a decade ago.
No shit.
Yeah.
What?
Yeah. And I remember using that as I had to start from the idea of behavior. Like, if you can't get that in your belief system immediately, I could get it in how I acted and then work backwards. I'm not saying that's the right way. I'm just saying I had to start somewhere because I had that judgment the same way that you were talking about, you know, and you don't mean to, you know, and even when I would ask questions, they would be judgment laced, you know? So you have to get to a point where you can say, well, like you were saying, let's talk through your story and try and put the pieces together. Some of it, you made a choice. Some of it, this just happened.
Right.
You know, junk happens.
Yeah, right?
Yeah, let's just piece it together.
Right. So forgive me for the antagonistic.
I knew it was coming. Go ahead.
Why is the church so bad at it? Now, if the presupposition to that question is flawed, I'm open to that.
Yeah.
But, and I've read this multiple times that it's the Pew, is that right? Is that the
Pew Report?
Yeah. When people are asked, what's the number one, what's the first thing you think of when you hear Christian? The number one thing is gay hater. Like that's the number one response. Now that's a bit dated because I'm out of that community. So I will admit that. That doesn't seem like it's being projected.
Right.
He, she, they love me like Jesus does. What?
Yeah.
What the fuck's going on in on your side over there, man?
Okay. Well, then we'll back up to the question and say, we can look at this multiple ways. We can say, what's wrong with all of this? And we'll definitely go there.
Oh, yes, we definitely will go there. Because I got lots of questions.
I know. But it's somewhere we need to back up from that and say, okay, what's right there and how can we encourage that? Or we can say, is there something right somewhere else? Because if somebody else is doing it better, some other group is promoting humility and love and kindness better, then let's explore that.
Okay, you know? Ken, but the only exception that I'll take with that is that you guys advertise.
Right, I was thinking that. Yeah,
okay. So it's in your marketing campaign.
The neo-Nazis are not saying, like, you're modest.
She loves me like Jesus, okay? So let's just
But nonetheless,
the only thing I'm saying is what's on the inside of the package seems like it should match what's advertised on the outside of the package.
Okay.
Is that a fair assessment?
It's fair. It's my fault.
And no offense, bro, you walked right into that. Like, I was just like, throw that pitch. He's going to throw that pitch. Anyway, all right. And I don't mean to be antagonistic at all, but I don't think I'm alone in this.
Right, right.
And you know, this is the honest truth. I would love to go to church. Mm-hmm. Now, not these big ass fucking Tonight Show versions. God, that shit. Mm-hmm. What are you people doing with these massive buildings and you don't have to respond to this. Okay. I'm just fucking venting right now. And your fancy light shows.
And the big screens and the smoke. Like at the concert, yeah.
Are you fucking kidding me? So then it's like, and then it's almost like all the failed rock stars, the Eric Church wannabes,
maybe he's a pastor wannabe, you know?
Well, he seems to be pastoring, bro, based on your experience. Like, way to go, Eric Church. You have a convert.
Right, right.
Anyway, but to go to a church that's small enough that is people that I'm familiar with, like, hey, Joe, Jim, whatever, and just sing, because the hymns are very familiar to me, right? And very comforting. Not, I don't, you know, I don't really care about, it's just, you know, I don't care about the implications of the words or the, you know, those kinds of things. It's just like, that's just very familiar to me. And it would be very comforting to sit in a pew and people open up their hymnals and somebody behind me thinks they can sing, but they can't sing. But they are making the proverbial joyful noise. And the pastor saying something, right? I don't need 45 minutes or whatever. Like, bro, you ain't that. Like, no. 20 minutes and then, like, wrap it up, okay? And then let's commune. Let's – that would be awesome. Now, I would keep my – atheist status, like I don't, but 9 times out of 10, when I go to a church and I've given up on the quest, one, you like asking for my money, and two, I just want to hang out. Like, I don't, I'm not here to corrupt your belief system. I'm in your playground, right? I'm not going to come in here and take a piss. I'm not going to, I'm not looking to pick a fight and say, here's where I disagree or what about this. No, I'm here, like, just universal communal love and like, hey, get, but it's, it always escalates to what would happen if I died tomorrow. And then I have to say, I will go into an eternal blissful sleep. I will go back into the energy of the universe. And then you see what happens after that.
Yeah, it won't be.
Anyway, that's a lot of,
wow.
And I don't know where you want to take the, all that.
There was a lot of answers tied into those ranting questions, but there's no way I could have got it in there.
I apologize.
But I will tell you this, that feeling that you talked about, I had that 2 weeks in a row where, so I'm trying to get back into attending church after all the pandemic stuff.
Oh,
and,
yeah, yeah.
And my wife is not thrilled about going into a building with lots of people. But anyway, so I went into two different churches. And neither one of them could I say, well, I was ever a member there, but I attended there. I knew the people in it. I knew them from various places. And Jeff, it felt like that community thing. When I walked in both places, the first one, the girl at the door greeted me by name because I had invested in her life when she was in college, in a college ministry, you know. Not in depth, you know, but just held meetings at my house for a few times. And walked past, saw other people, probably 3 or 4 more people that I had invested in, that it's like, okay, I feel good here,
right?
You know? But that doesn't come at just me picking up and going into a church, you know, where I don't know anybody and I have a, I'll say a chip on my shoulder, you know, but something like that. It's like that doesn't necessarily work there. Maybe you could say it should, but it doesn't. But those places where I had invested in people, but it, like, it was, I don't want to say paying back, but it felt good to be there, you know? And, well, the other part of that is, and here's sort of your answer, is another thing on the label of Christianity is that there is a us and them type notion to the idea.
Seems to be.
Yes.
It's kind of inherent, right?
It's inherent. Yeah, that's a better way to say it, because we don't.
You got some exclusivity there.
Right. Like, and it's like you said, it's not the headline. We don't want to advertise it, but it's built into what it is. But so it's all how you handle that, you know, the Christian and the non-believer coming into it. So like, do we go in it like, okay, or as the Christian, I can speak from that standpoint. It's like, do I say, well, here's a heathen. Let me see what I can do to save them. I've never thought that. I don't think that.
But you're an anomaly. Would you agree on that?
Yes.
Okay.
All right. But an anomaly, yes, but there are other people.
I'm not saying that you're the only one, but I'm saying, I would say you are the exception to the rule.
Okay.
And I say that, well, and I would tell you that that's, we wouldn't have the camaraderie we have if that weren't true.
Right.
I mean, we'd be fucking, our friendship would have ended a long time ago. Mm-hmm. And that, I guess that's what's so unusual to me. Anyway, finish that thought. I'll come back to that.
Yeah. So tying it into the unconditional positive regard, if I look at someone as though like, well, you've got some good characteristics, they're not jumping right out at me. But if we dig deeper, I'm sure we'll find them. But I'm going to approach you as though they're there.
Right.
Yeah.
And that I don't know.
Right.
Right?
Right. Right.
I mean, it's just, I don't know.
Yeah. And then the negative vibes that I'm feeling, there's also a cause for that. You know, they showed up with the backstory that I've got no insight into. And so it's like, and it may be more systematic where they dress a certain way, have their hair a certain way as a mask, as a guard, something like that. And I want to allow for that, you know? And
here would be, when I have tried to go to church, and this may be just my only feeling, right? But if I've gone to a church where, I mean, we live in a smaller town, right? And I used to be, I used to have pretty high status in that community.
Yeah, you were a big fish, small pond.
That's right, motherfuckers, big, yeah. And but if I go in, there's always this feel of, I don't even know how to articulate it exactly, but it's like the people are too excited to see me.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
You know?
Yeah.
It's like, I'm not that exciting. Okay.
Right.
Like, so then all of a sudden I start getting suspicious. Like, why can't, hey, Jeff, how are you today? And Jeff is a sophisticated thinker. Mm-hmm. At least I like to think of myself as such. And I'm not going to assume that I know the reason why he's here. And I certainly don't have an agenda for him that I'm going to try to force him in. I'm just glad to see Jeff.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to go talk to Jeff about shit. Sorry, poopy, whatever.
The whatever Christian you say version. In church.
Yeah. And then say, hey, maybe dinner sometime. And then it's like, I don't know, maybe that's cool.
Yeah.
But it always feels like there's this agenda to pull me towards that, like, prodigal son kind of returning home or whatever. And it's like, can't I just fucking come hang out and drink your coffee and I'll put a few dollars in the and care about you and you care about me? And if it needs to go beyond that, I'm going to respect your belief system.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not here to dismantle anything, and I would appreciate that in return.
Yeah.
Why doesn't that exist? Is that a fair assessment, and why doesn't that exist in the church?
Yeah, okay. Well, your case might be unique, but...
Fair.
The idea is, though, like, if you had...
But do you think people get that feeling in general that, oh, they're trying to... It's almost like the upsell?
I would say there could be that underlying thing, okay. But I would say you experience it to the full extent because of the simple reason that you are who you are and you broke from the church the way you did. So like if Eric Church would have called you up on stage the other night and said, this is my best friend, Jeff Stuckey. I'm so glad you're here.
And we should be best friends.
Well,
God dang it.
It's only introduction away.
I think we'd be good friends.
Oh, absolutely.
Anyway, but that's another issue. Keep going.
Yeah. If that would have happened, then the next time somebody saw you, they would have said, hey, Jeff, I saw you up on stage with Eric Church, or I heard this happen, because it was a thing.
Right.
Okay, so when you denounced Christianity at some level...
I don't think that's a fair assessment.
It's not, I know.
Okay.
I knew it when I said it.
Denounced was a little bit too big of a hammer. I ain't denouncing anything. I'm just saying I don't want to wear that t-shirt anymore.
Okay.
I'm not trying to rip up your t-shirt.
Right.
just don't want...
I knew it. Okay. So,
and being on a podcast with a therapist fucking sucks.
Oh.
Can you imagine, like, poor Ann, she's got to deal with this shit.
I know.
And I try not to do it. I try not to exact every word.
You can't.
That's why I drink, yeah. Bro. I got it. You put a couple drinks in me, I don't give a fuck. Completely sober, I can't turn right. that shit off.
Well, you changed my outlook on Fridays. Fridays is my new Monday because this is when we record.
You're like stressed out.
I know. It's like, oh, it's Friday.
Fuck, he's going to grill me. Anyway, back to not. So let's go with separated from Christianity. Okay.
All right. Well, you
I said. Don't have an axe to grind with Christianity.
Okay. So when you did that, though, unfortunately, because you're you, that didn't happen in a vacuum. Everyone knew about it. Or I'd say everyone in your church family community, you know, they knew. And so, like, that's a thing. It's like the elephant in the room, you know. And
but why does it change? I think, I'll be interested to see your response on this. I think I have become a kinder, more compassionate, more intentional person as a result of that change for me. And I want to be very clear. I'm not trying to undermine anybody's belief system. That's above my pay grade. But that doesn't seem to matter.
No, it doesn't. And which is I mean to the people that you're talking about.
Right.
And that's the whole idea of our man-made notion. Good guys who drink and cuss a lot.
Right?
It doesn't have to be literally drinking and cussing, but the idea is like, yeah, I'm me, I do what I do, you know, but I'm a good guy. That's what you want to put out there. And that's
exactly
great.
The foundation.
Yeah.
Is that because I've lived that conflict, right?
Mm-hmm.
And it was very, very difficult. That first transition away from a religious orientation. I mean, when you break up with the God of the universe, bro, I know you haven't done that, but that is stressful as fuck.
I can imagine.
It is like, and then you like, you ask him out again. You're like, I didn't mean that. I'm sorry. Yeah. And so there, it takes several iterations of that to finally like pull out of that.
Mm-hmm.
And then when you do finally do it, you just wait to like evaporate. Like you're just going to like,
is this going
to
happen soon?
Like, or some tragedy is going to happen, right? I'm going to get hit by a bus or something because I just broke up with the God of the universe. And, that's a terrifying experience. Yeah.
And the worst or a added thing to that is that all the friends that you had chose sides and it wasn't you.
You're fucking kidding. Nope. It was like, hey, where did everybody go?
But, you know, in their defense, if your choices was, I'm going to follow God or Jeff Stuckey.
Why is that? There's no forced choice there. Oh, Jeff just doesn't do the Christian thing anymore.
Yeah, and I'm not trying to defend that except to say that that's what people thought.
And this,
that's what's wrong.
This is what pisses me off.
Yes.
And
I think I picked up on that.
Yeah, but I think it matters, man, because I will tell you in earnest, there is not a single argument that I could construct against the ethic of the life of Jesus. Mm-hmm. When you read the Gospels, particularly the Gospel of John, I mean, that is just such a beautiful, just the way that it's written, and it's just more, I don't know, philosophical, it's less historical narrative, so that would appeal to me. It's inarguable. It's a beautiful, wonderful, incredible thing. And I think it matters.
Mm-hmm.
When you have an artist like Eric Church sing a song, it's not just the lyrics, it's the way he fucking sings it.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, he sings it like a guy that is struggling with the undeservedness of that.
Mm-hmm.
But also the desire for it.
Yeah.
And that exhale at the end of the song where he just kind of that silence and then fuck.
I know.
Dude, I was hugging everybody around me, man. Bro, I love you. I mean, it was just like, it was magical. Damn it, I wish the church would unleash that.
I know. That's our quest here, Jeff, to somehow I don't say make that exact.
That's what man made. We're going to do right.
Yeah.
And hopefully there's not a conflict for men of any religious orientation. Right. That even though the tagline is good guys who drink and cuss a little, that's not a prerequisite or a requirement.
Right.
But that for anybody that wants to experience unconditional positive regard and then pass that experience on, that is the heart and soul of man-made. And the man-made program is designed for that journey so that when you get to the end of that journey, regardless of what, you don't need a fucking label. If you want one, you whatever, but you'll have a centeredness to you. I had a client this week who's going through some difficult circumstances, and I just sent a text, see how they were doing. And they sent back, and I told them I'm taking this, okay? Something like, how are you doing today? And the response was, unfuckwithable.
Oh, okay, I get it.
Right?
Yeah, sure.
I had to read it a couple of times. Yeah. And now it's easier to see it than it is to hear, unfuckwithable. So at the end of the man-made program, you will be unfuckwithable. And not only will you experience what it feels like to be loved, embraced, supported with an unconditional positive regard, you'll be able to create that in every relationship that you have. Mm-hmm. And that is our philosophical core, and that is what we aim to do.
Mm-hmm. Wow, that is a great wrap-up to our rambling today.
It was solid, man. I don't think it was ramble. Appreciate you sharing the intimacy of that experience. Mm-hmm. And that's another thing that I've always valued about you is that you will let whatever experience move you however it moves you. You don't have this is my way of saying it, but you don't have like a, is that secular or is that spirit, whatever it is. If something moves you spiritually within your faith, you let it move you. Mm-hmm. It doesn't matter if it's Pink Floyd or Eric Church or whatever it is, or talking to a homeless person. You let any experience affect you and move you spiritually in the way that it does. And that's, dude, that's fucking cool, and really something that inspires me, because in the beginning, as I moved away from Christianity, it was a common reaction to that was to start to de-emphasize that. And I fucking love the Gospels. I still read the Gospels. I still am moved by the way that Jesus lived his life and how he interacted with people. And what I find so impressive about Jesus, and whether he's fictional or historical, to me makes no difference, he didn't give a fuck. I mean, he went into the temple and started flipping tables. He's at a wedding and he makes more wine. Mm-hmm. He lounges with harlots and tax collectors. He marches his ass into Samaria and has an interaction with the woman at the well. That is scandalous as fuck if you know the historical context. Yeah, yeah. And he just did it.
Right, right.
And when you contemplate that and then you think about the recklessness of which being loved like Jesus does, dude, that's provocative.
Yes, it is.
And we're going to create that shit. All right, wrap us up here. Land this plane before I do another touch and go.
So the shaman truly came out today. And if you have comments on anything that was said today, let us know at Becoming Manmade Today on Facebook. Or you can check out our website, Becoming Manmade, and there's a way to contact us through that. Just call Jeff and I if you want at any time. So give us the 5 stars, and thanks for listening today.
All right, peace out.
make.